Hello, it's Robert Bathurst here. I was one of the first guests on My Time Capsule, and Mike has asked me to tell you that you can now listen to the podcast ad-free by subscribing to Acast Plus. Details of how to join are in the description of each episode. Mike says it's very reasonably priced. In fact, Mike says it's a bargain. And who am I to disagree, locked here in his cellar? Anyway, for a small subscription, Acast Plus, My Time Capsule, ad-free. Free. Unlike me.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, and welcome to My Time Capsule. I'm Mike Fenton-Stevens, and this is the podcast where I ask my guests to tell me the five things from their life that they would like to preserve in a time capsule. They pick four things that they cherish and would like to keep safe, but they also pick one thing they'd like to get rid of from their life, something they want to bury in the ground and never think of again. My very special guest in this episode of My Time Capsule is the singer and songwriter, and very occasionally actor, the one and only Chesney Hawkes. And I bet that's not the first time he's been introduced with that line. Chesney is, of course, famous for his massive hit, The One and Only, written by Nick Kershaw, which topped the UK chart for 5 weeks and reached the top 10 in the USA in 1991. It was taken from the film Buddy's Song, in which he starred alongside Roger Daltrey. Chesney was named after Chesney Allen from Flanagan and Allen by his dad, Chip Hawkes, who is still the bassist with the band The Tremolos. Silence is golden. Yep, it would be if I stopped singing. And his mother, the actress Carol Dilworth. Chesney has appeared in several TV shows such as Channel 4's The Games and Hit Me Baby One More Time. He's also been in Let's Dance for Comic Relief and the ITV series Sing If You Can, which he can. And he's been in a number of hit musicals to prove it, including Can't Smile Without You, featuring songs by Barry Manilow, and Joseph and His Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. I close my eyes. Yeah, I'll shut up. This year he released a box set, The Complete Picture, the albums, 1991 to 2012, which consists of 5 CDs and 1 DVD. He continues to tour, write, and occasionally play with his dad and brother as part of the Tremolos. Chesney has always looked to me like one of the nicest men in show business. I think this conversation may well secure him that title. I hope you have as much fun listening to it as I had having it. Where are you? Are you in Los Angeles? Or
no, I'm actually back at my folks' house at the moment. I have a little...
This is my kind of home away from home. I mean, like a little log cabin.
Oh, wow, that'll do, wouldn't it?
And look, the best bit about it, hang on, best bit about it is we're right on the river, look.
Oh, my God, that's fantastic.
Isn't that beautiful? So, yeah, so it's I'm very lucky to have this. I'm 50 years old and living with my folks.
Yeah, well, there are times where I wish would be nice to go back.
yeah.
But I've discovered some strange connections between, well, they're tenuous, really.
One, I've also had a number one hit.
Ah. Mm. Which one was that, Mike?
Well, I sang the lead vocal on the Chicken song for Spitting Image.
Oh, my God, that's brilliant. What a great claim to fame that is.
Well, maybe. That's awesome. Maybe, I don't know.
I bought it, Mike.
Did you?
I had it. I was target demographic back then.
You were absolutely the right age, yeah.
Well, yeah, because if you think about that, was, what, 87, something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I would have been, 16.
Yes.
16-year-old boy.
You would have gone, I get this joke.
Oh, my God, yeah, absolutely. And at that moment in my life, I didn't get pocket money, but my mum bought me every time there was a new number one on 7-inch vinyl.
Wow.
So I probably got that on 7-inch vinyl somewhere.
Oh, what a thing to have kept going, though.
Yeah.
What a shame you didn't.
I know. Although, you know, I think it's probably good that it stopped after my youth, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I guess I could have carried on doing that, but these days you can't buy 7-inch vinyls.
No.
So, you know, what am I going to do? Collect it on Spotify?
Yeah, well, that's about it, isn't it, really? When things went digital, I thought, oh, I'm going to get a collection of all the number ones digitally.
Yeah.
And I spent... Yeah. Months doing it, months and months, you know, searching through the internet and paid a fortune for downloading. And it would take you sort of 20 minutes to download a single.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah, those days.
Now I could just go, show me all the number ones.
Well, exactly. It's probably a Spotify playlist, you know, all UK number ones, you know, just do it.
It's so infuriating, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because for a long time, number ones were an unusual thing to happen.
Totally.
You know, if you got a number one, you were there for a number of weeks. So in a year, there would be, you know, 12 number ones.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then it went to the position where every week it changed.
Yeah, it's weird now. I mean, I don't follow the charts at all now. I mean, when I was a kid, that's all I did. I lived for that Sunday afternoon, you know, the countdown.
Yeah.
And obviously watching Top of the Pops on a Thursday, I think it was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And yeah, and God, I lived for all that stuff. And I couldn't wait to buy that record and, you know, and I've still got all my old albums on vinyl, you know, Prince stuff.
Oh, have you?
Yeah, and you too. And I've got all the Beatles.
I made the mistake of getting rid of them. I think I've still got the Beatles.
Yeah.
But I got rid of lots of other stuff.
My two boys both have a turntable each, so they've been collecting vinyl themselves now.
Yeah, well, it's well back in, isn't it? It's great stuff. Yeah. I recently bought myself a turntable because I missed it.
Yes.
I missed that process of going, okay, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to listen to some music.
Yeah, exactly. And it's nothing quite like the warmth of the vinyl, like the noise as the needle hits the record, and just takes you back, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, well, you get those particular noises on your own record as well, don't you? They're unique.
Yeah.
You get your own little clicks and bumps that you recognise and you know them.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And sometimes it would miss a whole verse and go back to the other verse.
I had a copy of Kate Bush, England by Lionheart, which is just a gorgeous song.
Yeah.
And for me, it always goes, oh, England... My life. And that is a little...
Right, a little groove, little groove. Snap in there, yeah.
Yeah.
Funny. Things you remember.
Yeah.
It's just amazing. Oh, I do love Kate Bush. See, Hounds of Love was my Kate Bush era.
Oh, it was a beautiful...
Running up that hill and...
fantastic stuff.
Cloud busting. Yeah, it's just beautiful. Yeah. Amazing.
And the other weird connection I have with you is that I once went to dinner at a friend of mine called Robert Bathurst, who's an actor who lives near me, and he said, Mike, this is Steve, he runs a local farm here, and this is Peter, he's the local butcher, and this is Roger, he's in The Who.
Oh, right.
And so all those years ago, that film that you made... With Roger Daltrey.
Yeah, oh gosh. So you had a dinner with him?
We did. We had an extraordinary dinner.
Yeah, I bet.
We had an amazing dinner where, you know, everybody sort of avoided asking him the obvious questions. We had a very nice meal. And then right at the end of it, somebody opened a bottle of wine and we all went, oh my God, what is this? This is amazing. And he went, yeah, I brought that. And went, what is it? And it was some sort of Petrus 1965 or something.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And he said, I've got it from the cellar.
Yeah, of course he did.
So
of course he did.
Went with him in because he didn't drink. So he said, I'll drive you down to get some more if you want some. I said, okay, let's do it.
Let's do it.
Yeah. We got in his car and he drove like a rock star.
Of course he did. Yeah.
Of course he did.
Faster than the wind, I'm sure.
Yeah. What a brilliant thing.
Yeah, I haven't seen Rog for a while, but like, you know, he's obviously very much a father figure for me. And, you know, we'd stay in contact now and again at birthdays and stuff.
Oh, how nice.
Yeah, he got to meet my kids. I took my kids down to the farm and everything. So,
yeah.
He's slightly more of a recluse these days, you know. He's getting on a bit, I guess. But he's still on tour. He's still playing.
I know. Incredible. Well, they all keep going, don't they? Your brother plays with the tremolos now, doesn't he?
Yeah, actually, funnily enough, I play with the tremolos as well.
Do you?
Yeah.
God.
Well, last year, my father was, he had a tremolos tour booked, a 60s gold tour.
Brilliant.
And unfortunately, he hasn't been very well. And he did a couple of gigs, but then he kind of just couldn't carry on.
What a shame.
I happened to be in the country. I was about to go back to LA, actually. My brother's the drummer in the band, always has been. Well, always has, what am I like? since I've been around, he's played with the tremolos, you know.
Yeah.
So Jody was like, why don't you come in and fill in for the old man? And of course, I know the songs at the back of my hand, you know. And I was like, all right. Yeah. All right. You know, so we drove to Norwich. Jody and I drove to Norwich and I had a guitar, you know, sticking out the window, trying to remember, here comes my baby. And he's like, oh, we do a different arrangement of that one and that. And I was like, okay, oh, shit. Yeah. So got it together, did the show. And then Dad couldn't do the whole tour. So I ended up doing the whole tour.
Wow.
It was really quite fun, actually, being introduced as the tremolos.
Yeah.
You know.
And did they tell him that you were going to do it?
Well, the way that it worked, because Dad was like always possibly going to make it back because he was, you know, not well, but maybe he'll get better. So they never announced that he wasn't going to be there. So when it came to the tremolos, because it was the Marmalade, Herman's Hermits, Jerry's Pacemakers, and the tremolos was the headlines.
Brilliant.
So basically they got to that point in the show and the compere just said, unfortunately, Chip is not going to be available. He's not very well, bless him. So the crowd went, oh, you know, and he said, but we do have his two wee lads to fill in. So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Jody Hawkes and Chesney Hawkes with the tremolos. That's how it worked.
Brilliant. I bet they went mad.
Yeah, it was kind of like, you know, letting them down and then, oh, you know.
Yeah.
It was fun. And I've agreed to do the tour, well, be available for the tour again, October, November. So I think because Dad's not doing so well either and still. So we'll see. Maybe he'll make a few appearances, but, you know, I'll be out as the tremolos with my brother.
Fantastic. Well, you should keep it going, of course. You know, that proves that silence isn't golden.
That's right. Yeah. Funnily enough, I spent yesterday, I've got a little studio set up here and I'm going to be doing a bunch of solo gigs through the year. I thought it'd be a good idea to throw in Silence is Golden.
Yeah.
And so what I did was I got the old man in the log cabin here and I got him to record the three parts of Silence is Golden harmonies. And I'm going to do a cappella version of that song with me singing the lead and Dad doing all of the harmonies.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So what I need to do now, I'm try and record him, video him singing in three different angles, if you see what I mean, and have him, the three of him behind me singing. So that's my plan.
Oh, God. Chesney, when are you playing?
It's all on chesneyhawkes.com.
I'm going to come. I'm definitely coming.
Great.
That'll make me cry.
Yeah.
I just know it will.
Yeah, I'm going to definitely get that together. If the old man is willing to be filmed,
yeah,
we'll see how it goes. Well, he has an illness that is called multiple myeloma. Mm. It's a cancer of the bone marrow.
Yeah.
And what happens to most people is they break a bone and they don't know how they managed it because it attacks the bones, so it makes them brittle.
Right.
So my dad, he found out, unfortunately, by breaking his back, and he broke five vertebrae in his back.
Oh my God.
And so he's lost like 5 inches in height. So he's kind of stooped over now, which is a real shame. But what I'm saying is he doesn't look the same. You know, he used to be taller than me and now he's 4 inches shorter than me, you know, so.
But can still sing those harmonies.
Can still do it. Yeah, absolutely. And as the recordings testify.
Fantastic. Okay, brilliant. So let's find out. What's the first thing then you'd like to put from your life in a time capsule?
All right. Well, the first thing is when I was a kid in the 70s, we had a piano and it's a baby grand Broadway piano. And it used to belong to John Lennon.
Oh my God.
And the story goes, my dad in the early 70s was working at Titmuss Park Studios, which is, the house is John Lennon's old house.
Is that where Imagine was filmed?
Yes. If you ever see the Imagine videos, yeah, with John and Yoko walking around the gardens. Mm-hmm. So that's Titmuss Park. There was a studio there and my dad happened to be recording there. And he turned up to work one day and there's this piano sitting on the lawn in the rain. And it wasn't long after Lennon had moved to New York and sold Titmuss Park to Ringo.
Right.
So Dad asked the engineer, what's the deal with that piano out there? And he said, oh yeah, that was John's and Ringo doesn't want it. So he's just put it out there for now.
Oh no.
So Dad was like, I was just going to get ruined. He said, yeah, I know. I don't know what to say. You know, he's like, well, I could take it if you want. And I'll ask Ringo. So he came back to work the next day. He said, did you manage to talk to Ringo about the piano? He said, yeah, you can have it. No worries. So Dad just legged it out of the studio, found a mate with a transit van.
Yeah, I bet.
He literally backed it up, put it in the back of a transit van and brought that home. And that's the piano that I learned to play on.
Oh my God.
So it was in my front room. And I like the first song I ever learned to play was Imagine, honestly. So that's why I'm such a John Lennon freak. I went to New York when I was 19 and I was there to promote a record, but I was only interested in going to all the places that John Lennon had been, you know, photographed at or famously had lived died at the Dakota. But I did, it's like a pilgrimage for me. I went to the Imagine Circle in Strawberry Fields. And then I wrote a song about it called John Lennon Lived Here. With Nick Kershaw, for enough. Anyway, that piano, when my parents moved out of their house that I grew up in and moved to a smaller house, I inherited the piano and it came to my house when my kids started to learn on that piano. And then when I moved to the States 10 years after that, I gave it to Nick Kershaw, or I lent it to Nick Kershaw.
Lent it.
Yeah, exactly. My dad always says, you didn't give it to him, did you? So it's now sitting in Nick's front room, you know? So
wow.
If that piano could talk, eh?
Not to talk about the value of a thing like that, because without a doubt, we know if you can genuinely prove that these were instruments used by the Beatles, and suddenly those things are ridiculously expensive.
Yeah.
But the very fact of having had him play on that.
Yeah, it's, you
know,
pretty...
In that room, I mean, I know that the Imagine video is on a large white grand piano, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not that piano.
No.
That piano actually was bought by George Michael.
Right.
Yeah, so I don't know where that is. Probably in his estate. Or something. There is a white grand piano at the Beatles Museum in Liverpool. Mm. They've recreated that whole room, all completely white, got a white grand piano in there and everything, but it's not the original one.
Ah, right. You really are a Beatles aficionado then, aren't you?
Well, I do love the Beatles. I do. I really do. I mean, to be honest with you, I always say it. I don't know if I would be the same songwriter without those records, you know? I always refer back to what would Paul do, what would John do, you know? I feel like those songs, then they weren't written. They were just part of our culture. They were breathed into life, you know, and that was it. They were always there.
You can't quite believe it, can you, when they say, well, we just sat down and wrote this song.
No.
Or we were just messing about. And now we've got evidence. Now we've got the footage and we can see them do it.
Wasn't it amazing?
It's astonishing, isn't it?
Absolutely astonishing. You know, that moment where McCartney was sitting down, just willing Get Back out. And you could hear the kind of genesis of it. And he's just playing and playing and just... kept going and suddenly he's got the hook and then you've got, you know, very bored George Harrison and Ringo Starr sitting there with their hands on their face, like look like they've been there for hours, and suddenly Ringo goes, Get Back, yeah, that's good, I like that. Like, wow.
And then off they go, they just join in
and that's it, that's
and there it is.
I know, and same with so many songs in that footage, like, you know, when he was just tinkering away on the ivories with Long and Winding Road before it was a song. It's like, oh my, I cried. I was like, wow, it's actual evidence, as you say, of it coming into existence. It's just absolutely incredible.
Yes, it is really moving, isn't it?
Yeah.
I did a radio comedy in the 80s and we had a joke in it that then became part of the Beatles myth, as it were. I said the line, Ringo Starr, he's not the best drummer in the world. And I said, well, he's probably not the best drummer in the Beatles.
Yeah.
And that's the first time that line was ever said. You know, that famous line.
Yeah. I thought it was John Lennon who said that.
Exactly. It wasn't. It was me.
Wow. Well, there's another amazing claim to fame you have there, Mike.
I don't think it's a claim to fame. I think it's just one of those strange things. But it's very weird to be somewhat slightly involved with the story of the Beatles.
Yeah.
To me, it's almost enough. I sort of go, wow, my life has been worthwhile.
Yeah, it's a great quote. It's a great quote.
I don't think they were particularly pleased about it. Whenever they were asked, they were always annoyed, weren't they? No, we wouldn't say that. Why would we say that?
Because it's true.
Well, he certainly wasn't the best pianist. There's no doubt about that.
Oh, God, no, definitely.
What
not.
A thing to do to a baby grand.
I know. Just unbelievable. Yeah. But he was the perfect drummer for that band.
Yeah.
I love it when you can see or hear the multi-tracks and you just, and I've heard it where they just bring up the drums on the Day in the Life and it just sounds like some bloke having a bang around. I mean, there's no particular time to it. It's random. It's weird. But if you bring everything else in, it's like, it's genius, you know, it's absolutely genius. Technically, probably not the best drummer in the Beatles, as you say. So.
No. Oh, but what a lovely thing to have. Well, I think you need to ring Nick Kershaw and just make sure that he's polished it.
Yeah. Well, I often go up to visit and, you know, have a little tinker. And it reminds me of my youth because if you're a piano player, there's no keyboard quite like the keyboard you learn to play on. It has a softer touch. It's an old, I think it's 1890s, I think, like something like that. Mm. So it's soft. It's been kind of worn down. The ivory is a little bit rounded, you know, and it's different to most other pianos, you know. So it kind of takes me right back to my youth just playing it.
Yeah, that's slow action. Almost.
Yeah, totally. It's got a soft action because, you know, I've got a Yamaha upright at home that my wife bought me that it's full on hard, you know. I mean, I like it actually. And you can play like boogie woogie on it really, really easily because it's got a real kind of a tenseness to it, you know, very loud upright. And it's just a very, very different thing. It's just a completely different instrument, you know.
Mm. When you write, do you write with guitar or with piano?
Oh, both. Well, whatever comes my way. I love the piano. I really do. It's my first love. But guitar, you can do more with the guitar. You know, it's like, I feel like the mother of all instruments is the piano. Mm. Any musician should have a grounding in piano. I really do think so. And for me, I know what I'm doing on the piano keyboard. You know, it's like, I know where everything is. I know where I am. I know everything about it. Guitar has always been a bit of a mystery to me. I can play, but I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just doing it.
Yeah, perfect. All right, well, we will take that baby grand and we'll keep it out of the rain and keep it safe in the time capsule for you.
In a nice, I guess it would have to be controlled temperature.
Absolutely.
And sealed.
I don't want any warping.
No.
No.
We have to have it sealed in a particularly nice capsule, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
But we can negotiate with that.
Okay. But in the meantime, it'll be hermetically sealed.
Yeah.
And safe.
Perfect. It's safe. Yeah, exactly.
Lovely. Okay, Chesney, that's your first item. So let's move on to what you put in for the second item.
I'm going to put my wedding ring in there.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. I've been married for 25 years this year, mate.
Congratulations.
Thank you. That's the silver, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's an actual proper achievement, isn't it? It's like a real moment, you know? So we got married in 1997 and, you know, we have three grown-up kids now and still very, very much in love. And she is the most important person in my life and always will be. And so, yeah, I wanted to kind of mark in my time capsule about me. Mm-hmm. You know, I have to have a piece of my wife there. And, so there you go. That's definitely going in there. Perhaps it could sit on top of the piano there, you know.
Just, nice. Yes.
Just where I'd put the sheet music, just a little bit by there, yeah.
Where did you buy it? Tell me about the ring.
Well, no, my wife, she got this for me. So there's a place in Indiana where she's from. She's from Indiana. Mm-hmm. That her mother had always got all her jewelry made and everything.
Oh.
And so she would have made it at this place called Images. And it's like an old-fashioned, proper... And it was made specifically for me. So, yeah. And I'm trying, oh my God, isn't it terrible? I've got an inscription in it, but I can't even read it with my glasses. I should know exactly what it says in there, but it definitely says the date and everything. And there is a little message from my wife. I can't read it now. Isn't that mad?
It says, even when you get old enough to not read this, I will still love you.
There you go. That's exactly what it says. Yeah. Well done, Mike. Thank you.
Brilliant. So how did you meet then?
Oh, we met. She was a model back in the day.
Enough said.
Yeah, exactly. Pop star, model. Well, that's a keeper, isn't it? Yeah. We basically have defied all of the odds, you know, because most people that meet at that point in their life in those businesses will probably be a fleeting escapade, shall we say, dalliance. But no, we met in a pub. She was doing the whole New York, Milan, Paris, London, and she was passing through London. And it was the 4th of July. So she was celebrating with another model friend of hers. And for some crazy reason, she decided to go to the Edinburgh Castle in Mortlake in West London.
Right.
And it was a little pub not far from where I was living at the time. And my mate Miles was playing guitar there. And it was a shitty little place, like spit and sawdust kind of place, you know, and a bit of a crappy gig, you know, like, and he called us up, me and my flatmate beforehand, and said, oh, can you just come along and support? Because I know what it's going to be like. It's going to be, you know, two men in flat caps and a Jack Russell, and I'm just, it's going to be soul destroying. I just know it. So come along. And so we're like, all right. So me and Ash, my flatmate, we turned up, and he was right. It actually completely was that, you know, and he's in the corner playing his music. And I'm sitting at the bar with Ash with a pint, and these two beautiful American models walked in. And, you know, the angel sang and that was it. You know, she came in and she actually came in with this friend, Tess, and a friend of hers that actually was a mutual friend that I knew,
right,
a guy. And she came in and I was introduced and I said, can I buy you a drink? And she said, I'll have a pint of lager. I was like, will you marry me?
Can I now buy you a ring?
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, so... And, you know, she was moved in 2 months after that. And we never looked back. 25 years later, 3 kids.
Brilliant. You know. And none of that makes any sense, does it, really, when you look
no,
at it?
No, not at all. Not at all. It's like, if you ever believe in fate, I guess that's it, isn't it? Because, you know, why would she have been at the Edinburgh Castle on the 4th of July to celebrate her, you know, independence and everything?
The day she lost her independence.
The day she lost her independence, as I always say on our wedding, because we got married on the 4th of July 2 years after that.
Oh, wow.
That's our wedding anniversary. And I always say that. This is my lack of independence day.
It's a very wise thing to put the day we started going out and your wedding day together. Well done.
Well, you know what I'm saying?
Well, I always forget the day that we started going out with my wife, always. Oh, and I shouldn't. Because it was 3 days before my 21st birthday. So in fact, but I'm rather selfishly at that point thinking, oh, it's nearly my birthday.
Of course. Yes. You don't say it's nearly my birthday. That's when I met my wife.
No.
Yes.
What an idiot. And every year, just before my birthday, I get that terrible guilt of waking up and finding a card next to me.
I've done it again.
No.
Oh, Mike.
Oh, well, there we are. Well, 25 years. And the strange thing is that just recently with the Queen's 70 Jubilee, I remember very clearly her 25th Jubilee and thinking, wow, that's a long time. How about that? You know, and now it's 70. Yeah. So I hope to still be, you know, I'll call you from the old people's home and say, congratulations, you remember me. Congratulations, mate. You made it to 70.
So you're going to turn into an old West Ham fan.
I am going to turn it basically into.
Oh, leave it out, mate. Leave it out, son. Come on, you MS.
Oh, I love it. I love it, mate. That made me giggle.
Good. Well, all right then, lovely. Let's put your wedding ring into the time capsule as your second item.
Right, okay.
Brilliant. I'm really enjoying this. Okay, let's move on to number 3. Right, it's time to take a short ad break, but this is the only ad break. So sit back and relax, and we'll be back soon.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist,
fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome back. So, hands up, how many of you thought when I said the only ad break that I was going to use the title of Chesney's big hit again for a cheap laugh? Well, I am disappointed in you. I'm bigger than that. Right, let's find out what else Chesney Hawkes would like to put in his time capsule. You're still waiting for it, aren't you? You're pathetic.
Okay. Funnily enough, I've got a whole list of things and I'm deciding as I go here and changing my mind about things as well. Isn't that funny?
Okay. Well, it'd be interesting to find out the things that you don't pick then.
Yeah. Well, we can go into that and I'll tell you which ones I didn't pick and I did pick. So,
okay.
I'm going to go for my songbook, my journal.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny because I've had journals obviously through the years and the way that I tend to do it is I have one book for like journaling and I end up putting song ideas and song titles and things like that. And then I end up putting full lyrics into it as well.
Right.
Because more often than not, my songs are personal to me and mean something and come from the heart, you know? And I end up, I just naturally did this from maybe kind of teens where I would also put in like photographs of what's going on in my life at that point or quotes that inspired me or headlines even from what's going on in the world at that particular moment.
Yeah.
And just silly things like, I don't know, I went to the Seychelles with a couple of mates and I stuck in like a beer mat into one of my journals, you know, and just things like that just kind of take you back, you know?
Yeah, that's perfect.
Yeah, I love it. And funny enough, my daughter has picked up the mantle and started doing what she calls her scrapbook, which I guess that's what it is, really.
Yeah, yeah.
But the difference with mine is I'm writing songs in it and I'm journaling as well. It started off with two different books, like, you know, my songbook and my journal. And then it just kind of all morphed into one.
Brilliant.
Because I thought, well, why not? Because it's all the same thing. You know, I do sometimes do this thing where I call it the morning pages. Have you ever heard of The Artist's Way? There's a book called The Artist's Way.
Yeah.
Which I read when I was probably about 15. Mm. And the one thing I got out of that book was this thing called the morning pages. And basically you're supposed to just get up. The first thing you do before you do anything, just as you open your eyes, is just grab your journal and just write whatever comes into your head. Anything. It doesn't matter if it doesn't make any sense. It can be complete gobbledygook. More often than not, it actually ends up being, you know, making some kind of sense. And you kind of, I've journaled my dreams or whatever, you know, just what I'm doing today. Well, sometimes it can be very banal and kind of boring. Other times it can be quite poetic and just full of verve and whatever. So I do that sometimes in my journal as well. I don't do it as much as I'd like to. You know, I do. Mm. I kick myself sometimes and I think, oh, shit, I haven't written in my journal for like a month. Like, so
yeah, yeah.
What's going on? It's almost like you get scared of it or something. You know, it's so weird. But it has become a kind of, you know, my life in a book.
Mm.
And there's a few of them. And I guess if I'm allowed to amalgamate them into one big book.
I'll get them nicely bound.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I was thinking that would be nice. I'll get them all sent over as soon as we're done here.
So do you find that you're writing something and suddenly that would inspire you to start a lyric?
Yeah. Sometimes those morning pages that I was talking about actually become a lyric. Yeah. That happens a lot.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it's actually a really good way of, you know, getting over writer's block. That's a fantastic exercise for anyone creative that is going through any kind of block or doesn't know what to write about or whatever, is that exact thing. Because your brain is creative, whether you feel like it or not. It's turning over and there are ideas in there. There's stuff in there that you might want to get out.
Mm.
And it's a really good way of getting it out, actually. You know, I think David Bowie used to do it as well.
And he used to just write loads of different words that he liked that for whatever reason sparked something, got his juices flowing. And he just write loads of little words on little bits of paper and then he just spread them all out on the floor and just put them together and stuff like that. I love all that.
Yeah. So that sort of explains often the strange juxtaposition of words that he has.
Totally. Yeah. Absolutely. I'm sure maybe John Lennon did something similar because he's his lyrics in some of the old Beatles songs are like so outrageous, like from Happiness is a Warm Gun, for instance, you know.
there are those notebooks, those John Lennon notebooks, aren't there, with little cartoons. He was a great cartoonist.
He was a great cartoonist. Yeah. I love his self-portraits with the hair and everything. Yeah. Little glasses. Yeah.
Like all those people who can do that, so simple and yet really clearly, obviously, John Lennon.
Yes.
It's amazing.
Oh, totally. You can always tell when it's a John sketch. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose that is, you think about it, that sort of morning session that you're talking about, that's a bit like Paul McCartney with that guitar, just strumming away. I've got a sequence of chords here. He is just making up. He's making sounds to begin with, isn't he?
Yeah, I did that naturally as well. And it's something that Nick Kershaw taught me because we've been writing together for 32 years now, something like that. And one of the things that he used to do back in the day that I still try and do now is, more often than not, I think most songwriters will probably agree with me here, is that music comes more naturally than lyrics. You know, so you'll have a little chord sequence and a little melody or so, and you just kind of mouth stuff, you know, so you go over a thing and you just, so what Nick did with me is that we would make a little kind of a track, we'd write the music and have the track kind of going on loop, and he'd send me into the vocal booth and he's like, just sing anything, say it. don't worry about it. don't think, just sing. And you just do, and you just go in there. It's like you see it with rappers, you know, they're just freestyling or whatever, you know, that creative juice just suddenly comes. So you sing for like 10 minutes or something and just stuff, and you come back to little themes and you go off on another tangent and come back. And so then you come back in and you listen through. A lot of it might be a load of bullshit, you know, but then you'll pick one little bit of melody. Ooh, that's a nice little, see where that note kind of was, you know, slightly blue on that moment there. Let's follow that route. And, you know, you come up and you're off.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I absolutely love that. There's lots of little tricks like that with songwriting and, you know, that I've kind of kept in the top pocket, you know.
You do analyse things like the Beatles lyrics and you can almost see, like you say, that thing of just sing something. Yeah. So singing, she loves you. I don't know what I'm just going to say, yeah. That's all right. Actually, that's quite good. I like that.
Yeah, that quite works. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And accepting that innocence and that simplicity in your writing is often a difficult thing. Like you say, you've got 30 years of writing experience. And so the quandary in those circumstances is not the writing, but the self-criticism.
Totally. So I find that the first thing that comes is normally the best. Because it sometimes, I mean, I don't want to get too spiritual about it or anything, but sometimes I feel like it just kind of comes down.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's a channeling of some sort, you know. I mean, it obviously comes from your own head somewhere, but it just blurts, you know. And sometimes those are the moments that you need to just follow. The best songs, in my experience, the ones that stick, the ones that people like, the ones that people relate to, are the ones that come quickest. There's a song on my latest album that hasn't been released yet that was the first thing that me and my co-writer, Jake Gosling, were writing. And it's the first thing that came out. It was just like, boom. And we wrote this song in half an hour and it was done. Lyrics, everything done.
Yeah.
And it was just like, oh, well, that was easy. Let's do another one. And then, of course, the next one took like 4 days, you know. But that's kind of the way it works, you know.
That's the Ed Sheeran argument, isn't it? That's what he's been saying recently, is that once you set off on a path and it's there in front of you and you can see it all, it's really quick. You can do, as you say, half an hour.
Yeah.
But and as time goes on, you think, oh, perhaps I should do something more clever than that. There must be a better rhyme than that, or you know, I've gone for the obvious one.
Well, that is the bane of anyone's creative process, really, because, you know, I have friends that are amazing songwriters and then just bloody ruin it by overthinking it.
Yes.
And that first song that I wrote with Jake on this particular project that took half an hour, and then we ended up deciding to make a whole album. So we made this whole album, which took like, you know, 6 months or so. And then that first song is going to end up being the first single.
Of course.
course, you know, that's always, it's just,
I know. The only songs I write are for my grandchildren, and they basically test me to find as many rhymes for the words wee and poo that I can. So one day I'm going to release an album of them.
Yeah. It's a little bit, it's quite a niche market.
It
though,
is.
Mike.
It is. Well, I don't know. Yeah, I think we could find it's larger than you think.
No, I think you're right. There's a lot of kids out there and a lot of silly blokes.
Yeah, indeed. Right. So we're going to take all of your journals and I'm going to bind them beautifully.
Yes.
Leather bound.
If you would.
And we should put them, I might even build a library.
There you go. I have a whole library. Well, there's a niche market.
Well, I think they'd be fascinating to look through. I think that quite often these things do reveal things about people.
Oh, they do. They really do. You know.
One day somebody will want to look at those.
Well, you hear about people that, my best friend, his mother just passed away, and he's found all of these love letters and things from her past that, you know, it's just a real kind of window into what she was like as a young woman. And it's just fascinating, you know. So, you know, maybe one day my kids will look through my journals and think, oh, I wonder what ever happened to that song. or he might, you know, my youngest is a musician, so he might, I might steal that.
Yeah, great.
Might use that, yeah. Keep it in the family.
Brilliant. But we've got the proof, of course.
Got the proof.
Yeah, you've got the copyright, mate.
Go to Mike's leather-bound library.
Fantastic. Okay, so that's three things we've put in. So we've got two left, one that you want to keep.
All right.
And one that you want to get rid of.
Okay, let me think. Oh God, I was so many. We're going to have to say a few that we're...
Okay, let's have a look now. Because if you think you know what the last two might be, what are the ones that you've missed out?
Okay, so some of the ones I've missed out, let's have a look. Okay, one of them is the acoustic that I learned to play on, which, you know, I thought we've done the piano.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so that, I thought I'll leave that one.
Yeah, and the acoustic came from a local shop and...
Well, it was my dad's, actually. Oh. It was my dad's old Ovation. And I remember when I was a kid, we had a friend come over and he had a little three-year-old girl and she picked it up like that. And then she did, and everyone's like, whoa! And she just went, whoop, like that. And it just landed on its end and the whole head just kind of broke.
No.
And the neck was like snapped in half. But we got it fixed and I learned to play on it even after that, you know, and I still love that guitar.
Yeah.
So I left that one out.
Okay, what else?
The other one is our family dinner bell. We've had this thing. A friend of ours gave this really amazing, it looks like a kind of a Buddhist bell. It's like a big brass chain with a big brass bell on it, which has been in our kitchen since the kids were little. And it was always hanging on the wall. And we used it as a dinner bell their whole lives. And we still have it in the kitchen, like all these years later. So that was a really lovely one, you know. Mm. Whenever we ring it now, it's rare now, you know, when they hear it. But they're like, oh, it's the dinner bell, you know.
How lovely, Christmas.
Yeah, exactly. So that would have gone in, but, you know, it can't because I've only got two more.
Yeah.
The other one was, I just came up as we were talking, was my Beatles vinyl collection.
Oh my God,
I was like, well, that's got to go in, surely, you know, but maybe not. So, okay, so let's go with the last two then, shall we?
Absolutely.
Now we've let all those go. The last one I want to put in this time capsule is my 1986-87 season West Ham top.
Right.
I don't know if you're a football man at all, Mike.
I am a football man and I absolutely understand your passion.
Okay, good. You get it. Yeah. So when I was very young, you know, probably 12, something like that, my dad was a football fan, but he was a QPR fan and he wasn't that kind of guy that would take you to football. You know, he's not that into football.
Mm.
He never took me and my brother, but we had a family friend who was a season ticket at West Ham and he was like, I'll take him to football. So so the first game I ever went to with my brother, he was probably 10, you know, I was probably 12. We went to West Ham Spurs away. So it was at White Hart Lane and we lost 5-0 and all the West Ham fans were doing the okie cokie up and down the stands. And I was like, yeah, this is my tribe.
Brilliant.
And you can change everything in your life, can't you, Mike? You know, you can change your hair color, you can change your car, you can change your wife, but you can't change your football team.
No, absolutely not. No, my grandson has chosen Tottenham and we don't know why. None of us know why.
Oh, God.
But he just has, and that's it. And then it's in your blood.
He made a horrible error.
Well, yeah, all right. So come on, West Ham. It's...
But the reason I choose that top is that Jody and I went home and away to every single game that season.
Wow.
Yeah, we were there for all of the evening FA Cup first round at, Sheffield Wednesday, you know, in the rain or whatever. We did it all, every single, because when you start going to every single game, when you get about halfway through the season, you're like, well, we can't not go to every single game now, you know? So no. We actually managed to do every single game that season.
God, that's real dedication.
Yeah, it really was.
And thank God West Ham weren't in Europe as well.
Oh God, no. I'm sure I was only 15, so I'm not sure I would have had the funds to cover that, you know?
No.
Luckily we had our family friend who was like taking us everywhere. So yeah, it wasn't just me and my 13-year-old brother and my 50-year-old self going up on the train to Leeds or anything. It was, you know, we were being looked after by our very good friends, family friends. So
We didn't go to school at all that year.
No, exactly. I think there may have been a couple of, like, you know, leaving school early to get on the train or whatever.
I bet, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But good memories, you know. And now my 16-year-old son, Indy, is absolutely obsessed. I mean, he lives in the States, but just obsessed with football, and in particular West Ham. You know, he's one of those kids that knows every stat and he knows all the transfer details and, yeah, you know, rumours and who's going where and who used to play for who and who's the best goal scorer in the league at the moment and, you know, who's got the most assists, and he knows it all. So he's getting me up, because we live in Los Angeles. The games are on sometimes at midday. That's 5 a.m. So yes, Sometimes we're getting up at 5, rolling out of bed, putting a West Ham scarf on and getting into the lounge. And, come on, you Irons!
How brilliant, though. What a fantastic thing. And how lovely that he's chosen your team.
Yeah, but I did say from a very early age to all of the kids that unless they were West Ham, they'd have to move out. So... So that wasn't ever going to be the case. I think once you take them to a game, and I took all of them quite young, then, you know, you've chosen. So that's it. Okay, it's in. It's in now.
Phew. Yeah, yeah. Phew. Yeah, it's locked in there.
I locked them in early.
And how do you like the new stadium?
Well, at first I felt it was like, you know, lacking in the energy of Upton Park. I mean, it's very hard to beat the energy at Upton Park, you know, because it was so close. You could almost touch the players, you know, it was so close. And I loved that about it. So going to the London Stadium, it was, you know, you were so far away. And all of those chants that football crowds do. At Upton Park, you started off, it would start off in the corner in the stands. And of course, it would just quickly kind of fill the whole stadium. And suddenly everyone's singing, Johnny loves Clare Blue Army and all that. But at the London Stadium, when it started in one corner, it's so big that the other side of the stadium couldn't hear it. So it never really spread, if you know what I mean. So that energy wasn't quite there to start with. And then it started to kind of get a bit better and feel like home. And I know the West Ham fans were all complaining, it didn't feel like home. But then this season, actually, I think it really clicked in. I went to one of the European games. I went to see Seville. But I've never felt an energy, an atmosphere like that. I mean, it was like, it reminded me when I was a kid, first kind of coming up the steps and you see the green and you feel the crowd and it's like the smell of the grease paint and that kind of, or should I say, smell of pork pies or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. And so that feeling and just that energy lift, I liken it to the first time you ever see New York, you come over the Manhattan Bridge and you see the skyline. It's like, oh, wow. It's like a rush, you know, that feeling is the same. And I got that again at the London Stadium when I first walked out into the stadium and the crowd was just absolutely rammed solid and there's lights and it was just, it was phenomenal. So
yeah, but there's a certain joy, isn't there, in a team not doing well, I think.
Yeah.
My younger brother is a Crystal Palace fan and he gets great thrills.
Oh, completely.
You know, just fantastic.
Well, the camaraderie you build up with a team like West Ham and with supporters like West Ham fans, because we've been through it, you know, I've experienced relegation a few times.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever played on the pitch?
No, I've never even stepped foot on, not at Upton Park or at the London Stadium. No.
We'll have to put a request in with Russell Brand.
Yeah, go on, Russ. You can sort me out, mate.
How fantastic, though. Yeah, it's many, many years of agony, but also joy.
Exactly.
I love it.
And I love the agony.
Yeah, the agony. The best reaction I ever saw from a crowd was a West Ham crowd who basically laughed and cheered and clapped at a chant at Crystal Palace once, where Crystal Palace was singing, "We're shit, but we're 3-0 up."
That's classic West Ham. I love it. I love it. But you see, you don't see that. It's not reported so much, that kind of stuff, is it?
No.
It's like, I remember back in the mid-80s, Man City came to Upton Park and we beat them and it sent them down into relegation. And we all came onto the pitch, or at least I didn't, but they were all singing at the Man City crowd, "You'll be back, you'll be back, you'll be back," you know.
Brilliant.
And of course, that was right in the middle of the kind of hooliganism and all that and the bad reputation of football. And, you know, those kind of things weren't reported, but there's a natural kind of camaraderie between fans and respect. There's a lot of respect there as well, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Any fan would respect somebody who went to every game home and away for a whole year. And I'm glad that shirt reminds you of it. I'm going to carefully, very carefully.
Just fold it up nicely.
Absolutely. Yeah. Don't worry. It's very safe. It's got tissue paper.
I love it. Tissue paper. It could go into one of those boxes, you know, that kind of seals shut as well so that nothing gets in.
No. And it retains the smell.
Of the grease paint and hot dogs.
Oh, Chesney, how brilliant. That's it. That's the four things that you want to keep that have gone into the time capsule. So now we've got one final thing to put in that you'd like to forget about.
It's funny. I have found this one really hard, actually. My first thought was my phone, but then I thought, no, actually, if I did that, I'd need it to call my kids. So I don't want to bury that and throw it away. So I've plumbed for something that is a bit funny. It's rotten shark.
Right. Is it a band?
No, actual rotten shark.
Right.
I have a real affinity with Iceland. I've spent a lot of time over there and I love the people and I love the place. And I've organized songwriting retreats over there over the years and had all sorts of wonderful songwriters over there. And it's a place that I love. And for some reason, their national kind of, what do you call it? A dish, not a dish. It's like a thing that they do anyway. And I think it comes from years gone by when there was no food.
Yeah.
And they basically, they would hunt the sharks. A delicacy is the word I was looking for. they would hunt these sharks and because they're so full of ammonia, you can't eat it. It would be poison. You can't eat the shark as it comes out of the ocean.
Right. I didn't know that.
So what they do is they bury it. Yeah. They bury it for like months until it rots.
They're starving.
Yeah. This is what they do. And they dig it up and then they hang it up like this rotten carcass of a shark.
Yeah.
And they let it dry. And then apparently that's when it's perfect. Like after 6 months of being rotting in the ground and they carve off the meat straight from there and they eat it. So the reason I say this is like, I was on one of those kind of touristy trips while I was over there and I had a bunch of songwriters with me and we all went on this thing, as you know, to the rotten shark place. And of course they've got a little gift shop there that sells all the knitted, you know, mittens and scarves and hats and things like that. So I thought, I'll buy a load of that stuff. That was quite nice, you know, all made of like all this incredible wool from Iceland. And
lovely. Yeah.
And then we all tried, literally straight up, the guy was there and he's telling us, these are the sharks, and you could smell it. It was disgusting.
And you're thinking, how bad can it be? Surely.
I just thought, this is a delicacy from years gone by and they still preserve this amazing part of their culture. And you know, maybe it's okay. You know, maybe it's okay. So they literally just carve off from the carcass and then they just give it to you. And so we all tried it and it was like, literally everyone was just like, it really does taste like rotten shark. It is the most disgusting thing you'll ever put in your mouth.
The name's on the tin, yeah.
Yeah, it was just hideous, horrible. And I couldn't get the taste out of my mouth all day, you know. And then what was funny about it, because as I said, the whole area smelt of like, you know, rotten fish. And then I came home back to England where we were living at the time. And I brought these gifts of these amazingly beautiful knitted mittens and scarves. And of course, they all smelt like bloody rotten shark. My wife's like, get that out of our house, you know.
Of course, yeah.
So we can bury the whole rotten carcass.
Well, but the Icelandic people will love that. Oh, great, good. Put it in for 3 or 4 years.
Yes, exactly. Like, cook it a little bit more, like... And then I think we could throw the mittens and the hat and the scarf in there as well.
Okay.
If that's all right with you.
Yes, absolutely. It will go in there in their own little compartment. And that really is hermetically sealed. I don't want John Lennon's piano smelling of rotten shark.
Yeah, so what we can do is we'll put those mittens and the scarves and hat, and we'll put it in one of those plastic bags that you attach the Hoover to.
Yes.
And then we'll suck it right out, seal it all shut.
Yeah.
And be done with it.
Has it gone forever? You never have to suffer that again. But the question everybody's asking is, why did you ever suffer it in the first place? Are you mad?
I know, the clue's in the name. Rotten shark. Exactly.
Oh, brilliant. Chesney, it's been really lovely to talk to you. It's so nice of you to do this for me. And I can't wait to see you and your dad singing together on tour together.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, well, if you get to 60sgold.com, that's where all of the venues and everything and where you get tickets and stuff like that.
But I can't wait. It's been really lovely to talk to you. Thank you so much.
You too, Mike. Thanks for having me.
You have been listening to My Time Capsule with me, Mike Fenton-Stevens, and my wonderful guest, Chesney Hawkes. My thanks to Chesney and for you for giving me your time and listening. Please do subscribe, rate, and maybe even review this show if you have the time and the inclination. It will be very much appreciated from this direction. You can follow me and My Time Capsule on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. We're very responsive on there, I promise, and are happy to answer questions and hear your suggestions for future guests, particularly if you've got their telephone number. The theme tune for this podcast was written by Pass the Peas Music and is available on Spotify. This was a cast-off production for Acast, and the producer was John Fenton Stevens. Okay, thanks for listening. Gives me a real boost to know you're there. I mean, as a boy, I was skinny and feeble and pale. So pale, I looked slightly unwell all the time. As a result, I had very few friends. Well, none, actually. But made me determined to climb out of that pit of despond. That's when I started singing. I knew it would be that that would help me to discover myself, love myself. In fact, that's why I wrote what was to be my greatest hit. I sang it to a bloke called Nick Kershaw, and he told me it just wouldn't work, so I never actually released it, but I hope in some way I inspired his great hit with Chesney, the one and only. My song, of course, was about me being a pale, thin lad with no friends, and it was called I Am the One and Lonely. Oh, come on, I made the effort. Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.